Did you ever want to eavesdrop when two people meet for the very first time? Well, here you go. We bring together two people who didn't know they would meet each other, who didn't know about this one topic that unites them. Here it is, a blind date of travel heroes.
Who am I? Okay, it's an easy question. Or it's a difficult question sometimes. So my name is Ian Cumming, and who am I? I'm Australian. I have been living in Berlin for the last couple of weeks, but I work on an organization called Travel Massive. So that's probably what most people in the tourism industry know me as, the founder of Travel Massive.
Wow, that's cool. You come from a land down under.
I do, literally. Okay, who are you? Yeah.
I'm Philip. I'm Philip Ibrahim. I'm from a land down under as well, but it's only down under in Germany. It's Swabia. It's in the southern part of Germany.
I'm gonna use Google Maps and look this up.
Yeah, it's you will know it because Stuttgart, our capital, has quite a couple of cars that a lot of people drive. Mercedes-Benz, Porsche, they come from that city.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That's the reaction I always get when I explain it.
Do you have a fast car?
No. Okay. No, it's something I'm not really interested in cars. I'm just interested in getting from A to B, it doesn't matter. And I'm here in Berlin. I'm the general manager of the student hotel, recently opened 4 weeks ago, or 6 weeks ago, actually. And sometimes I'm a bit cold, but 6 weeks open, 1st of October, we're opened our hotel. And I'm in Berlin since 13 years already.
Wow.
So it's quite a time, looking back.
Next question.
Tell us something that people usually don't know about you. So what do people usually don't know about me?
You go first.
Well, you got to think about it. Well, when they see me, actually, that's quite easy. When they see me now, people won't realize that I have lost in approximately 2 years, 1.5 years, over 75 kilograms. So if you see me now, you will not know that for sure. That might be an answer. Let's think about if there's something else.
How did you lose the weight?
I had a belly surgery, which was quite time too. And Then I came from 175 kilo down to around 95 now, which is quite good.
Is that why you have a gym at the student hotel? I've seen that.
I wish it would be the reason, but I lost before I started at student hotel already. But a gym at the student hotel is quite good, quite nice. I do like to train out and work out there.
Something that people usually don't know about me, let me think about that. A lot of people don't know that I am a programmer. So I actually developed the Travel Massive platform.
So you wear your glasses for the reason being nerdy?
I wear the glasses for two reasons. So people think that I'm smart. And, also that it's very easy to get into bars and nightclubs when you're wearing glasses.
Is it?
Yeah.
I've never heard that.
Yeah, you never have any problems. They just let you straight in. They just think, yeah, this guy's wearing glasses. So he's not going to cause any problems. So
that is a very, very, I'm going to try that because I have some glasses without strength at home that I wanted to use because I have contact lenses.
Okay.
For the same reason that I don't like glasses. I've worn glasses all my life. And if you're not able to wear sunglasses, I get frustrated. So
right.
And 20 years without glasses.
This is an unfair question, I want to say, because the question is my favorite travel destination. And I mean, I don't think that you can ever have a favorite. Like, you can have a favorite within a context. Say your favorite destination for skiing or your favorite destination for beach. But I don't think you can just have one favorite.
I think most of the time, all the destinations that I would love to visit twice would tend to be very favorable for me.
Right.
Because I love to do city trips, and a lot of times I've visited a city and then you make a mark. So quite a good example for me where what is not my favorite travel destination is New York. Mm. Everybody speaks about New York and you have to be there. And I went there once and it was not like catching me that much. So it was not like I don't feel the must of going there. But funny wise, I do have a couple of favorite destinations, but I do agree that it's probably, I would name it in a perimetry. How long do you can you fly? So how far do you go for a weekend trip? How far do you go for a short trip or a beach holiday?
Yeah.
So in a short perspective, I really love Istanbul. I think it's an amazing city. The atmosphere, whatever you can, what you live there, that is quite good. The weather is always great.
It's got a buzz, I think.
Yeah.
Istanbul.
Yeah. You can always put me there. And then far destinations, I'm an Asian guy. You know, I can go to Thailand. Sure. You can wake me. I go to Bangkok straight away. Right. I don't care. Bangkok is my shit.
I used to live in Bangkok.
No.
Yep.
Right. That's great.
So that's my answer to my favorite travel.
How long have you lived there?
I lived there on and off for about 3 years.
What?
Yeah.
That's massive because it's so bougie. I mean, you're never quiet. Day is more active than night is more active than day. You have all these night markets, millions of tourists.
Yep.
Smog. Oh, that's crazy.
It's but at the same time, Bangkok is a city where if you've been there, you'd notice that no one honks their horns.
True.
You know, you can walk for an entire a bus could do a 3-point turn in the middle of an intersection,
and they do
and no one will get kind of upset about it. So I think, you know, Bangkok, although it's quite hectic, is also a place where there's a lot of calm.
True. I agree.
What defines a community?
What defines
this is what we're here for, right?
Wow, that gets very intense. What defines a community? I think I can say what defines community for me. Community starts with you, because it includes myself in my surrounding. So I have to be open to form a community. I have some words that are flying around now, probably buzzwords in terms of, so my community has to be like uplifting for me. So I wouldn't have like a community that puts me down, whatever terms.
Supportive. Yep.
Reliable. Probably sometimes you need your community to be reliable. And whenever something is community-like or communication, there's a lot of community in a lot of words. It's a positive thing for me. So there must fun be involved for me.
Yeah. I think I've actually kind of tried to study the definition of a community, and it's there are actually lots of definitions. Lots of people have different ways of describing what a community is. But for us, for me, a community is a group of individuals or people that are working towards something, that have some sort of shared set of values.
Sure.
That work together to support each other towards achieving a common mission.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I think that is as well the point why it has to include you in whatever they do, because you have to fit in with your own values, whatever value it is. Yep. And it could be different communities touching each other at certain points.
The thing about a community is that every person adds value to a community. So community cannot be a one-way street. So, you know, there's this concept of, you know, audiences. Audiences are not communities.
True.
You know, because that's one to many, but a community is many to many, and every person in a community contributes. So then the value of the community is greater than just the sum of all the parts.
What makes a community break down, or why do you think communities are dismantled or not working anymore? What could be reasons for that?
That's a good question.
Now, for example, I think about, you know, what you describe is right. What you describe is right. But then there is a moment where one person decides to, you know, bring in the and not the right value like the other one. So either this person is put out of the community. Mm-hmm. So for the one part, the community lives on. But for the other part, there might be like a new community, because they are finding a new value, a new strength.
Well, I think that comes down to community values. So everyone in a community needs to know what their values are, what the community stands for. Sure. And they need to hold other people in the community to account if they feel that, okay, this person might be acting in a way that doesn't contribute to those values. Sometimes communities can split up because, you know, there might be a subgroup of that community that believes you know, that they have a different set of values.
True. I agree.
So I think communities are also very dynamic.
Yeah. Can't be static. What is so special about the community you've created? Well, let's see what it reflects on. Actually, 10 years ago, I founded a network of hotels in Berlin that cater open to LGBT people, called Pink Pillow, which was quite special at that time. And until today, there is no other destination that has something like this. So there is a community of 60 hotels sharing the same value that says that we want to cater open to LGBT people without being a gay or lesbian theme hotel. We want to keep our own hotel personality without kicking people out. And now looking back at the last 10 years and seeing these hotels emerge and really having an international acceptance in what we have done so far, that is a very special feeling, and that's a very special situation. And sometimes I wonder that you have like such a great value of people, great people that really do that Pink Pillow thing in a very, very certain manner. So that is very special. Amazing. For me. Yeah.
Have you met members of your community that have, that have come back to you with feedback about how your community has made an impact in their lives?
Well, the good thing is that the topic didn't exist in Berlin in that way that we did it when we started. So there was no clear value for LGBT marketing on the side of the hotels. So we had like an empty paper that we could fill. So today the paper is full with stories and full with emotions, which is quite good. But now if I compare what we have done in Berlin to other destinations, for me it freaks out that there is no other destination worldwide that has a self-funded, non-profit LGBT network of hotels, because it's actually quite simple. And therefore it really gives a lot of feedback that a lot of people are interested in the way how we did it. And I learned the word straight ally from my friend Stuart Cameron, who told me once what a straight ally is. I never knew that this exists. But I think what underlines is that the people who do Pink Pillow, they don't have to be gay or lesbian. And I think sometimes that gives a bit of credibility to what we do.
Mm-hmm.
That was a good run.
So what's so special about the community that I have created? So I started Travel Massive about 10 years ago. So maybe our communities are about the same age, but I think...
teens, soon to be teens.
Yeah. So Travel Massive is a worldwide community for people that work in the tourism industry. And I think I can safely say it's probably the largest open source professional network in the world that focuses on travel and tourism. So we have about 50,000 members registered on our platform, and there are Travel Massive chapters in 150 cities in 70 countries. So, I mean, that's quite sizable, I think.
Wow.
But I think that there's Travel Massive could definitely be a lot bigger than what it currently is. But I think what makes the size of Travel Massive isn't what makes Travel Massive so special. I think what makes Travel Massive special is that it is a purpose-driven, value-driven community. So rather than just saying, well, you know, we're just this giant network of people in the travel industry, we've actually set a number of values for our community, and we've set a mission. So our mission is to connect the future of travel and make the tourism industry more accessible to everyone. And then the values that Travel Massive has is built around a number of things, including promoting innovation, promoting responsible tourism, because I think the travel industry really has an important role to play in sustainability.
True.
Also, promoting and fostering diversity in the tourism industry.
What is the benefit that the individual members...
Sorry?
What is the benefit for the individual member to be part of Travel Massive?
So the benefit for members is that they can attend events. So the Travel Massive community hosts hundreds of events around the world that might be networking events or seminars or workshops where people can learn about the tourism industry, about particular topics. They can meet other people. And it's a way to be able to connect with other people in tourism, not just in your own city, but worldwide.
That's cool.
So I think what makes Travel Massive special is that we are value-driven and mission-driven. And it's not just about being a giant network in the travel industry.
You have a network where you communicate with within the network? You have like your own communication platform?
So travelmassive.com is the platform. Okay. So it's sort of like, think of like LinkedIn for the tourism industry.
It's so funny. I never heard of it. So I'm really...
You should join.
Yeah, I'll do that immediately.
Why is it so important to have communities today?
I think sometimes a community is like a hub where you can, you know, get feedback, probably get advice, get like a knowledge that you have not, well, that you will not ask from somebody else. I would say the travel industry is one part where you really, we have our own language. So if we talk, sometimes we talk to each other and you take down the notes of the abbreviations and stuff. So much stuff that you only understand when you work in that industry. And I think that's quite common in all the other industries or communities as well. And sometimes it gives you guidance and security. You have people that you can rely on and you can come back on, and they really look at you and say, probably, have you tried this? Have you gathered this information and stuff? That's quite good. Yeah.
I'm still thinking about that question. I mean, I think there's lots of reasons why communities are important, but I mean, the question is, why are they important today? If you were to think about that, I would imagine that part of being in a community is also that, you know, so much of our lives is spent online.
100% agree.
And communities provide, well, communities can be online communities and they can connect people across the world. So there's an element of that you might feel that you might be alone in wherever you might live, but you can be part of something that's international. So, I mean, I think that the internet is very powerful in connecting communities, but the internet has also been quite instrumental in, I think, making people feel isolated. If you think about social media and, you know, the power of things like Instagram, you know, they can be great, but they can also be very dangerous because, you know, some people, I think, can feel isolated in on the internet, just alone. And so communities at a local level give people a place where they can meet other people and find support. You know, I think the ability to know that there are like-minded people that you can talk to that share the same values that you do can kind of...
Probably communities have always been there, just the lookout was different. You know, earlier it was church. Church gave a lot of guidance. Or when I look in my family, they come from smaller villages, you know. This village life is the same thing like community, you know, everybody, you share the same interest by living in that area. And I think what you say is right, the global picture that you can access today, you know, you open a webcam on the North Pole and the next second you open a webcam somewhere in Hawaii and you have live images, which was never the case earlier. It sometimes can make you get lost in all that possibility. So I do agree. Yeah. The three first steps to start a community. I think you always said the first step, you need to define a common goal or something that you have in common. And so community,
but actually that's
value.
Some values, but that's interesting because in fact probably for the first few years of Travel Massive, and Travel Massive started organically, so and it was also kind of a little bit by accident that it was created. So I started a meetup in Sydney back in like 2011. And it was to meet other people in the travel industry. And that was it. I'd never thought that it would turn into what's now known as Travel Massive. Other people started these chapters, right, because they wanted to do the same things in their cities. And it's still, I really didn't understand why, you know, this existed. I had a few ideas, you know, that I knew that there were, you know, content creators and travel bloggers and travel startups that didn't feel like there was a place for them to meet. And that's one of the reasons why they were creating these Travel Massive chapters. But I actually didn't, I had to talk to hundreds of people and ask them why they were coming to our meetups and start to synthesize that information, you know, into the set of values. So I think it's good to have a set of values, but I actually think that sometimes you might not even know what the set of values are, or they might be surprising to you. But I do think, you need at least a mission. You need a goal. You need to be able to say, this is what we stand for. So that would be step one. I would say step two is you just have to start. And, you know, for me, Travel Massive started with five people having a beer on the rooftop of the YHA in Sydney. So you don't have to have 1,000 people or, you know, or anything. You can start a community with just five people. So I think the second thing is just to
do it.
To do it. Yeah. And don't be afraid of
failure.
A little bit of failure. And you might have to try it a few times. But I think that would be the second step. I think we've got to come up with three steps. What would be the third step?
Well, I think if you're a smaller group, it's easy because you can gather those same thoughts or same ideas. But there's a moment where it gets so big that it's sometimes probably difficult to get the DNA or your own thoughts into writing or pictures or whatever. So I think this development of your own language and or your own communication or your own global picture, like verbalizing it and giving people a chance to follow it, would be the third for me. So
whenever you give
your baby a name.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's what you do when you get a kid or buy a dog.
You need to be able to explain it in a very simple way to people.
Yeah.
You know, communities can be very complicated things that you could spend hours talking to someone about, but you know, in order for other people to understand what it is and want to join, you have to simplify it. And you know, because that's what makes it easy for other people to then invite, you know, other people to a community. Let's say, well, join the community that I'm in because it stands for XYZ, you know. And if you can get everyone to be on the same page with that, it makes it much easier to bring more people into your community. That said, if your goal is that you want to scale your community and make it really big, and I'd argue that not all communities have to be super huge. No. Some of them could be just perfect with 1,000 people or
100
people.
Or whatever they are.
Yeah.
I think that there's no question size. Yeah, I agree.
How do you keep your communities alive and engaged?
That's funny because my job is I work at the student hotel. The student hotel is a hybrid model. It's the only hybrid hotel model that combines several target groups under one big roof. And the biggest part of what we do, the success of the day job, is the engagement and the action happening, to put it in words, because we have 285 students living in the hotel when it is good. We have 190 hotel guests and another 40-50 people who are not students but still living longer than 4 or 5 months in the hotel.
I wanted to stay at your hotel.
And I hope we were fully booked. Please tell me.
Huh? No, it was before you'd opened.
I was then.
Yeah, you couldn't accommodate me, but I love the concept of it.
Yeah, so next time you're going to be there for sure.
Yeah.
But I think then you would realize that this whole accepting the brand as a home and having people walking in your home and living there actively is quite a unique experience. And so we have a dedicated person that the main role is, well, as we would say, 24/7, no, but at least 38 hours a week to make events where we combine and connect, because it's about connection.
Yep.
Locals, the students, the hotel guests, the short stay or long stay guests, startups or interesting topics, whatever they come from, diversity, from CSR or whatever, and just put that in a big pot and make a nice soup out of it. And that is really what drives the success of the company Student Hotel, but as well gives my one property a very, very unique vibe that I've never experienced before in a hotel.
I think engaged, and how do you keep your community engaged? I think Well, I mean, I think also communities evolve. I mean, I think that for Travel Massive, some of the challenges that we were, you know, our mission that we were performing 5 or 6 years ago might be different to the mission that we're performing now. I mean, we were a place where travel bloggers were accepted. We were a place where, you know, travel startups were accepted, where, you know, they might have felt alienated in other parts of the industry. But, you know, the industry has moved on. You know, now it's a given that brands will work with content creators and travel bloggers. But I think I would say that one of the things that's important is that your community can evolve, and allowing your community to evolve, because people will bring things into your community. And as if your community expands, then, you know, and as the industry changes, the context in which your community exists in, you know, you have to adapt. And so I think you have to continually re-evaluate your mission and your values and make sure that the things that you're doing, you know, are relevant not only to those values but to the industry. So I think that's one thing about keeping your community engaged.
And you gotta give them the same right to change direction, to adapt to local or other needs, especially when you work with local groups. I'm sure you're gonna experience already that there's a different approach in, I don't know where your local chapter is, than in another one. So and then you have the first ones asking, can we take another color, or can we take another date, because that date is not the national Travel Massive date in our country. Is like, I don't know, the day where you celebrate something else. So I'm sure that is the key. When you have reached a certain size, and that's the scalability of the community, I think there is a moment where everything below that is just fine and good to organize, and then you get bigger, and then you need to probably adapt your own vision and mission to the fact that you're so big, mm-hmm. that you have certain meanings behind that. Yeah,
I think you also have to continue to curate your community. So, you know, in the early days of Travel Massive, everyone knew everyone. I mean, so it was very easy. I mean, there were 1,000 people, and every person you pretty much had heard of everyone else. But, you know, when you, as you scale the community, I mean, I know most of our chapter leaders, and I try to make a point of meeting our chapter leaders in person, getting to know them, and a lot of our members.
It's like Tom of MySpace.
Yeah.
You know Tom of MySpace? Tom,
except no one automatically follows you when they join. But the interesting thing Travel Massive, you know, what I want to do with the community is showcase people that are doing really amazing things in tourism. That's what makes me really excited. Mm. You know, but there are thousands of people doing amazing things in tourism. So you've got to find a way to be able to celebrate and showcase and highlight all these really amazing things that are going on inside of your community. So I think that's what keeps it alive, is you've got to recognize the people that are making contributions and the people that are doing awesome things. That's I think that's really important to the survival of a community. What's the best part of your job?
I can answer that question easy, because for me, being in a hotel was really a decision by heart. So I always wanted to be, I didn't want it always to be a hotel general manager, but I did the German Abitur, and I said I want to have a job where I can really stand up every day and think, hey, I can do this job until the end of days. Mm-hmm. I can go in a hotel, I can go in my hotel, and actually looking backwards, wherever I worked, I had the same feeling. I want to work with people, so working with people is absolutely must. Having the ability to being myself, or of being friendly or sometimes unfriendly, just adapting to the needs, that is very much my passion. And I gotta say, like, the host, the Gastgeber in German, that is really for me be the best part. I love if somebody is in my hotel or my place and really enjoys what they feel, what they have, what they eat. It doesn't matter, as long as they go out and really say, hey, that was a good time, a good life, or whatever we had spent. So for me, this is the best.
The best part of my job, I think, is that I get to see all of the things that are happening in the tourism industry at this sort of global level, and I get to meet really interesting people that are either startup founders, or they might have they might be business owners, they might be tour guides, but I get to meet people every day that are completely obsessed and passionate about the tourism industry and the positive impact that tourism makes in the world. So that's, I think, one of the best things about my job.
They should have asked me what I don't like. You know what I don't like?
What do you not
like? I have to sign so much stuff. When you work in Germany, you're like, sometimes you feel yourself like a little signage monkey. You just do that, like, time and time again. So always that the moment where I have a stamp of my signature, I feel like a German person.
A bureaucrat.
A bureaucrat that is doing clack, 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 clack. That's really the only thing that I really drives me crazy.
Yeah.
Especially that you can understand there are people that are checking on your signature in Germany. So there is a control at any stage of something, and they come to check whether you have signed at this spot this paper. And that's amazing. I wonder what they do when you ask them what is the best part of your job. It's like checking signatures of people. I hope I hear them in this podcast as well once. That's a 50-50 question for me. 8 a.m. in the morning on a Sunday, where would we meet you at? Well, I do have my son 50% of the time. That includes 50% of the weekends. And usually when he's around me, 8 a.m. is a time where he might be already ready for action. So sometimes I can push him a bit forward by putting on a record or some story in my iPhone, which I could do.
You're woken up by the child alarm clock.
No, he's normally he wakes me up very nice, and he's there's a moment where he just, I know he gets very movable and he's touching all the time, so I know it's time to stand up.
Yeah.
So then I might be still in bed. 8 a.m. on a Sunday. I think I would say 90% in bed, 50% of the time with him, and the rest probably without, but there
is. I'd be 100% of the time in bed. I love sleeping in. No, because I always work late.
And yeah, me too.
I actually get weekends are a time when I actually do most of the sort of software development.
You're a nerd.
I'm a nerd. Yeah, so my weekends are kind of good because, you know, there aren't as many emails that are coming in, and I can kind of focus. So sometimes if I've made a lot of progress, I might stay up quite late on Saturday, in which case there's no way that I would be awake at 8 a.m. on a Sunday.
Ian, when was the last time you were still awake at 8 a.m. in a Sunday morning?
Ooh, almost last weekend. that was different because I was in Manchester and I took the Saturday night off. I'm like, okay, I'm in Manchester for a night. I'm going to go and
get pissed.
Yeah. Well, as you do in Manchester. But I went to this like rave party. It's a random story, but I needed to get back to Berlin, and the only way to get back was via Manchester. Don't ask me why, but so I had this like random Saturday night in Manchester, and I used to love going to like rave parties when I was like a teenager. And so I looked up Resident Advisor, which is this huge website for like parties and things that are going on. And I found this like old school birthday party for this club night. And so I bought a ticket and I went along. And I almost made it to 8 a.m., but I'm a lot older than I used to be.
So I think it's good to hear that that's still celebrating. Mine was 2 weeks ago, and I was close to 8 as well. I think 7:30 is when I were home finally, but I don't remember much.
Who's your personal superhero?
Wow, that's a big question. There's so many layers in that question. Who is my personal superhero? So if I'm talking about role model, I really admire my small brother, who is 10 years, 9 years younger than I am. And he was never a good kid at school. He was never like one of those kids. I always was a sunshine kid, you know. I didn't work much and still was a decent grades. I had enough life and didn't spend so much on school. But he really struggled. He had to work hard. He didn't understand everything. He couldn't properly, you know, write. Languages were not his thing. He was never a good one. So he went to German Hauptschule, which is not, it's nothing bad in that, but actually the expectations might have been higher because all the others were on high schools. I never forget, he said, well, no, why? I don't bother. I do Hauptschule now, and then I do 1 year more, and I have the Realschule, and then I do another 2 years and I have my Abitur, so I'm at the same pace than all of you. I just do it in another way. And this guy is such a smart lad today. I can't put it in words when I think where he comes from, and he's now, you know, traveling to China to do like his nerdy stuff, programming stuff. I give you a random story. We're thinking about Secret Santa. Yeah, yep. We want to do Secret Santa at home, and I'm a type of guy, I open the app store, I look for the app, I download it, put everybody in place and let them do it. It didn't work, I don't know why. So basically he said, I'll write a program for it. Mm-hmm. And I said, he's joking. He said, no, I'll have a program that sends out anonymous, the drawn person to your email box. And it worked. So I didn't even bother about downloading everything. It took him like 10 minutes to fix something where I had to put my email address. I have to be a community. Then I have to invite everybody. So in that layers, in that terms, he's really for me a superhero. But that's more on a personal level. I do have massive idols in sports and everybody, all the smart sentences of all the sports stars, they're all in my head. But yep. Personal wise, that's my problem.
I find this question really hard to answer because I've kind of, I'm very stubbornly refused to kind of look up to people, and I mean that sincerely in that I meet lots of amazing people, so I would say that I would have 1,000 superheroes because there would be lots of people that I get to meet that I'm like, wow, that person is the smartest person that I've ever met that can do this. You know, and I think holding one person up and saying this is the person that's my superhero is I don't know, but I mean I think someone that I generally that I admire that it would be well known would be Bill Gates. And I think, you know, he's someone that if you look at what he has decided to do with his wealth, you know, who's the richest man in the world, I think probably even as we speak, that he's decided to contribute that wealth to, you know, not just the stock market and, you know, making himself richer, but he's really thought about what are the different needs of humans, you know, over the next century, and how do we lift people out of poverty. And he's the foundation that he's created, I think, has done some pretty amazing things. But also, he writes books and he puts out blog posts. And you know, if you think about someone that has really made it, but then decided to turn that around and make sure that he can make that wealth work for the world, not just a few people, I think that's a pretty amazing thing.
I mean, we came from Superman to Avengers. There's more than one there as well. So yeah. You need more than one hero.
Yeah.
By the way, the slogan of my hotel now is Together We Can Be Heroes, Berlin, based on the David Bowie.
We can all be heroes.
That's what you mean.
Yeah. And that's the thing about community, right?
Yeah.
Is that I think in communities, you don't want to have... I'm kind of anti-hero. I mean, I don't want to be... Oh, I'm the founder of Travel Massive and I'm amazing, because actually Travel Massive, I'm a small part of Travel Massive. You know, Travel Massive it's very easy to simplify it and say that I created it, but I didn't really create it. It was created by thousands of people.
But you had an idea.
And I'm kind of the benevolent dictator of Travel Massive, but I'm not the... I'm not the superhero of it. And I think, you know, I'd like to think that Travel Massive is full of superheroes, that it can all do amazing things. We don't have to just look up to one person.
What's the one personal tip for all the future travel heroes out there? That makes us very Messias-like, right?
Right.
the son of a preacher, sir. What is the one tip that I can... I don't feel comfortable in giving tips to future heroes. I mean, there's only one thing. Be yourself and you're a hero.
Be yourself, yeah. I would say, I don't know if this is the only person, but you know, personally, is sometimes it's okay to not listen to people.
I like it. That's good.
Because, you know, sometimes what, you know, if you really believe in something and you can see a pathway to something that you want to achieve, there are going to be people that are going to want to help you and support you, but there are also going to be people that don't want you to succeed.
100%.
Even though if they might not say that, but some people might act in a way that they might hold you back. And I guess I know a lot of people might describe me as being stubborn and kind of, you know, I'm fixed in my ways sometimes and I want to achieve something. But at the same time, I think that if I had listened to every single person that had told me what to do, I wouldn't have been as successful, because it's sometimes you have to decide who you're not going to listen to. Although that said, now I'm telling people not to listen to people, so I guess if you're listening to this, feel free to ignore my advice.
But you said something very smart earlier. You said you said when it's getting blank now, but you said something that should have stuck in my mind, but I'm sure I'm coming up with it again.
Okay.
Which I really like, because you're very on the point to that. I'll come back to it later.
Anything else that you'd like to say? When can I stay at your hotel?
When do you need a room?
Well, I'm going back to Australia.
Today? Tomorrow?
Tomorrow, yeah. So, but I guess next time that I'm back, I would love to stay.
I'm sure you're coming for that one little thing in March. I forgot the name. It's called ITB.
ITB,
yeah. I heard about it.
Do you know what ITB stands for?
Yeah, the International Trinkerbörse. It's the International Trinker Fair. Tourism. Sorry, I forgot. Yeah, no. A little joke with it. That's about it now.
I will definitely be here for ITB, so...
You drop me an email.
I'd love to.
I think I still got rooms available for that period. Yeah, very... I probably have 20 less now. No, I don't have anything more to say. I'm pleased to be here. It's always great. So rarely up down here at the western end of Berlin.
Where do you see your community 5 years?
Love it. Well, I talked about two different communities. The one was the LGBT community, or the LGBT thing we created. I think that's quite sustainable. I'm not very... I hope that it's not my face that always has to be the person pushing and dragging it. I hope there's other people emerging who can take the lead at a point. I think sometimes it's not bad if a person has, well, in my terms, a person that has created something gives away the point to have new and better and other ideas behind that. I would love to see that grow. And on my main job at Student Hotel, I just joined recently. So I think at the moment there is no competition for this hybrid model. And I'm 100% sure in 5 years we have a competition.
Right.
So it's going to be interesting how you evolve and how you go on when you're the leader and somebody comes and attacks you. How do you deal with that situation? What is the new thing that you're going to bring in? As long as you're leading, it's easy to be like creating stuff. But in the moment where you have to follow, it might change a bit. So I'm really keen to see what we do and what we have done so far. But based on what I do the whole day, I'm very convinced that in 5 years we still have very, very good events there and good parties and good people and good students.
Thank you.